Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 86. And Dave, as you said to me before we got on the air, happy NFL New Year. Effectively, at 4 o'clock today, the ball drops. It effectively strikes midnight, and the new year begins, and the feeding frenzy starts in the NFL as all the tenders take effect, and all the free agents are free agents and can go sign with new teams. A lot going on.
Absolutely. T-minus, let's see, what, 4 hours?
4 hours, yep.
Yeah, happy NFL New Year to everybody. This is, you know, even though we sit on the sidelines as Steeler fans year in and year out during this process, I mean, it's always enthralling to watch some of the, you know, there's going to be a few surprise names cut loose today. There was one yesterday in Eric Winston from the Texans cut loose. There's going to be a lot of bloodletting, as I like to say, today. And, you know, then the process gets going. So I'm excited. It's going to be a busy, busy day today.
And we've seen some guys get signed. We saw a couple moves in the AFC North. Guys from Cincinnati and from and Cleveland getting cut. As you said, Winston was the big name, the right tackle for Houston. They're also going to most likely lose Wells, their center, who's a free agent. So some of that line's coming apart. But we're also seeing names get signed. And the big one, I think, is John Clayton was hinting that Marquise Colston, the receiver from New Orleans, will get signed before things get done here at 4 o'clock. I haven't seen that name yet officially signed, but something people can watch here as we get up to 4 o'clock and who moves where.
Absolutely. The Twitter machine will be rolling nonstop starting at definitely at 4 Eastern. So, yeah, there's going to be some movement early on. There usually is a big rush right there on the first few hours into the late night tonight and into tomorrow. And you know, after the first two or three days, it'll probably quiet down, you know, a little bit. Not too much, but definitely after the first week and a half, 2 weeks, a lot of the big names will be off the board.
Yeah, and Dave, before we get into all the kind of machinations with the Steelers themselves, let's just talk about a couple big picture things that have been happening in the league. I think one move that happened yesterday that I don't know that it caught me off guard, but certainly it has big time ramifications. Is Randy Moss tried out or worked out for the San Francisco 49ers because players aren't allowed to be working out with teams? He had Jim Harbaugh himself do the throwing to him, and lo and behold, he had the workout, and a contract got signed last night, and so Randy Moss goes from being retired, 2 weeks ago and having kind of comical YouTube videos up posted and all the way to having a tryout with the Saints where he apparently looked pretty good to being signed to the 49ers. And as you and I have talked extensively, the Niners were the one team that I kind of threw out there and you threw out there as really being the if there is a candidate, we didn't really think there was, but if there was one, the Niners were the one team that really might look to sign Mike Wallace. Well, they filled that void now, and Randy Moss is a 49er, and I think that guarantees Mike Wallace is a Steeler.
I couldn't agree more. And even though I think the contract for Randy Moss was 1 year, I think 2.5, I think, is where that number came in. Now they still have the cap space and all. But, I mean, are you really going to sign Randy Moss to come in to be a third or fourth receiver? I mean, he fits the bill for what they're looking for as far as a stretch-the-field type guy. So, at this point, I really have to agree. I think this all but guarantees that the 49ers will be out of the running for Mike Wallace. Now, stranger things have happened, of course, so I wouldn't go be betting my house on it, but I sure like the odds now even more heading into yesterday that Mike Wallace will remain a Steeler. And we've said this all along. And hey, there's still 4 hours until the deadline here that a deal could get done with Mike Wallace. Although every second on the clock that ticks away, you think it might not happen. But let's hope and pray something gets done by this evening.
Yeah, and I'll continue with my stance that I think there's a decent chance we go into the season with Mike Wallace under the same contract. So I'm not looking for anything to get done here the next 4 hours, but that is certainly a possibility. The other news, Peyton Manning's still out there, and there are a couple things in this sweepstakes that are obviously going to change the landscape of the league no matter where he goes. Denver has, I think surprisingly to most people, emerged as maybe the front runner now. And the obvious question is then, do they try to move Tim Tebow, or do they say Tim Tebow can spend 2 years behind Peyton Manning and be used in certain play situations and occasionally come in, and that would really change a defense up from maybe the purest pocket passer in NFL history to a guy who, you know, running an option and doing some different things. So there's that. He had a visit to Arizona. Now the news is that he has met with Miami and he's met with the coach of the Titans. Bud Adams has said that he'll do anything he can to get the deal done. Tennessee, obviously where he went to college, so there's some intrigue there. And it seems like Miami and Seattle are out of the competition. So, apparently it's, even though he has expressed interest in the Texans, that seems to be out of the question now. So we're down to four teams with maybe kind of a leader in the clubhouse now.
Yeah, most definitely, and Tennessee is an interesting, there's talk, too, that they might be looking at Steve Hutchinson, the guard from the Vikings that was released this past week as well, too.
They are, in fact, I think he's visiting today.
And so, you know, that would be, that would probably be kind of laying the groundwork and say, hey, look, Peyton, this is what we're willing to do. You mentioned Tim Tebow, what do you reckon the Jacksonville Jaguars would give up as far as a draft pick, to have Tim Tebow in town for a year or two there? It would help with putting butts in the seats, that's for sure. And Jacksonville surely could use that. What do you think about the prospects of Denver possibly doing that if indeed they sign Peyton Manning?
That's the obvious thing. I think, obviously there are two ways to go. There is have him be the backup and learn under Peyton Manning. Option one. Option two is Jacksonville is not only the logical place, maybe the only place where you can see him going. If you're Denver, would you take just a third-round draft pick for Tim Tebow? Would that be enough for you once you've gotten Peyton Manning? Would you take... would you want Blaine Gabbert in the trade so you had a guy you could tutor? Because, if they bring Blaine Gabbert, if they bring Tebow in, is Blaine Gabbert essentially redundant, or do you need insurance in case Tebow fails? So interesting stuff. But I think if I'm Denver and I sign Peyton Manning, if I can get a third-round draft choice, I'm fine with it. I just say if you're going to move him, I'm not really going to hold out for – I'm not getting a first-round draft choice, I'm sure of that. And if somebody said a third, I think I'd go ahead and do that. And if I'm Denver, I also look, you can sign Reggie Wayne, Pierre Garçon, and Dallas Clark. You can sign all three of those guys potentially. And Peyton's got a receiving core to go to Demaryius Thompson and Decker from Minnesota, who they used, I think, a third-round pick on last year or 2 years ago. And you've got a cast of guys that he can really fire the ball around to.
And, if I'm Denver, I would even consider maybe a fourth-round pick, too, because, let's basically, after you get past RG3 and Andrew Luck, there's going to be, a few quarterbacks that might that need some long-time grooming that you could probably pick up in the fourth round. So, I would probably, as you said, I'd probably ask for a third. I'd probably settle for a fourth. So that's definitely something to look at, and it'll all be predicated, of course, on whether or not Peyton Manning signs. But I could definitely see that possibility that you laid out happening.
Now, the other thing in that whole scenario is Arizona's going to have to pull the trigger on Saturday one way or the other, because they owe Kevin Cobb a $7 million roster bonus. And you'd like to, they may end up having to pay that to get any value out of Kevin Cobb anyway. But if you sign Peyton Manning, you're less interested in paying that roster bonus. And I don't know if they end up having to waive Cobb or if he is a tradable thing with that, with or without that roster bonus. So you'd think that they would like to see this all get resolved in their position by Saturday, because, $7 million is a big chunk of change.
Yeah, I agree. And you think maybe Miami's just sitting on the sideline here, You know, Matt Flynn probably might be a possibility to join Philbin over there in Miami. Also, as a consolation prize, you know, Kevin Cobb, you know, maybe he would be an option for Miami as well if indeed outright released by Arizona. So I don't see Miami as a landing spot for Peyton Manning realistically. I just don't see it. I think they like to run that kind of West Coast offense, and I think they will go other, you know, a different direction other than Manning there. So they could be a player in Kevin Cobb if he's released by Arizona.
Albert Breer just tweets that he doesn't see that he's being told that Reggie Wayne does not necessarily see his future tied to Peyton Manning. He could sign somewhere before Peyton does. Certainly that's a possibility, but you would think there's probably some more value for Reggie and the comfortable relationship that he has with Peyton that it might be to his advantage. But look, at the end of the day, if he's going to get a couple $1 million more or an extra season or two out of a different team, certainly he could go another way. Dave, if we look at the Steelers situation, yesterday the news came down that the Steelers gave their tendered offers to the six restricted free agents, and Mike Wallace got the first-round tender. Everybody else got the low-round tender. This is, as you and I have talked about for a long period of time, and the issue here is Keenan Lewis is a third-round pick, so he'll be some real compensation back. But the issue is the two starting guards. For now, Ramon Foster and Doug Ligurski were unrestricted. They were undrafted free agents. So while the Steelers can match, if they decided not to match, they wouldn't get any compensation back. And there's a little bit of gnashing of teeth in Steeler Nation and concerns that guys are going to come and get these guys from the Steelers. And I just want to say two things about this. One is these guys are not that good. Okay, they're NFL players. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to downplay their abilities too much. Doug Ligurski is a fantastic swing backup. And that is his ideal role in the NFL. Doesn't mean he can't be a starting guard, but he is not a premier talent. Ramon Foster is also not a premier talent. There's a reason both these guys were fourth and fifth in line last year to be starting guards when those positions were available. They are the best the Steelers have in-house right now, but teams are not going to come banging down the door to sign these guys to reasonably priced kind of longer-term deals. Now, there is an attractiveness that they won't have to give up a draft pick, but the point is they can go find probably guys that they may look and say have higher ceilings where they're not poaching from the Steelers, and they don't have to waste time worrying about whether the Steelers are going to match. The second point here, maybe the even more important one, is the Steelers are going to match any reasonable contract for these guys in the short term. If they both got signed away, possibly they wouldn't match the second one. But, you know, I don't think I put this risk at virtually zero, and I think it's kind of a straw man argument some people in the media are putting out there that, you know, the Steelers are at risk losing these guys.
Yeah, I'm amazed at the outroar and all of this. You know, it amazes me. You know, people tend to value these guys higher than what they are, and I use
exactly because they're our own guys.
That's right, it. Exactly, and they see the lack of interior guys we have on the roster right now, especially after the release of Chris Kimoto. But yeah, you said, and look, Ligurski's coming off shoulder surgery. He is a interior swing guy. He's not an NFL 16 game starter. I mean, he's not. Now, Ramon Foster, I thought he had the most consistent season of any of the Steelers linemen last year, but let's put that in perspective here. This guy is not going to be highly sought after on the free agent market here, and as you said, I mean, let's look at the possible offers that they, you know, if someone was going to go after him, you're not talking about a huge offer sheet that these guys are going to get, and it's not like people are going to play games to give these guys first round, I mean, to give them signing big, strong signing bonus money up front just in an effort so the Steelers will not match that offer. I mean, look at the way these contracts are structured. Even if you gave the guy a three-year contract with a $3 million signing bonus, you know, that first round, I mean, mean, that first year cap hit's going to be 1.6, 1.7 or so million, and that's easily attainable for the Steelers to match the offer. And it just amazes me how people could not see this coming. And look, we wouldn't even be talking about this if these guys were 6th or 7th round draft picks, because the original round tender would have returned a 6th or 7th round draft pick, and there was still, even at that level, there was no risk of the Steelers losing this guy. So, I mean, you could color me super duper shocked if anybody comes after these guys trying to sign them to an offer sheet. I just don't understand the outrage of people out there saying that they're surprised that they did not get second round tenders.
Yep, and let's not give it more news than it needs by talking about it more than it needs to be talked about. So all these guys got their tenders. As we've been telling them all along, and I want to reiterate, Dave has been on top of these cap numbers. I've been on top of them, but I've been using his numbers. I want to be clear. When I tweet about this stuff and when I'm talking to other guys in the media, Dave is my source for this information, and he has been other people in the media's source for this information as well. So all the credit goes to the work that he's done there, and he has been on top of this for the last 6 weeks. Every day it's a changing shifting sands, and he just has been so far ahead of the game, ahead of the national media, ahead of the local media. Hopefully you've been listening to the podcast so we can take you through this stuff, and when we're not on air, you can be on his website, SteelersDepot.com, getting all the latest info. And again, this stuff is going to continue to change here as we go forward. And Dave, let's just talk about exactly where the numbers are. The final cap number finally came out at $120,600,000, right around last year's number. And there are two very interesting big points here.
Go ahead.
Yeah, one is the reason it came out so late is we have massive punishment handed out yesterday by the NFL against the Cowboys and the Washington Redskins. They've taken $10 million off the Cowboys for the next 2 years in salary cap and $36 million off the Redskins. And the reason they had to wait is to get the number back up there. They needed the NFL Players Association to sign off on this. And what happened is they gave 28 teams in the league $1.6 million of that cap money. They prorated it and distributed it around the league. And then they kept the Saints and the Raiders flat because they weren't exactly fully in cahoots with the whole situation. So they got nothing and weren't penalized anything. That being the major step in this whole process, and it looks like this is just beginning of what is going to be a very acrimonious battle between these two teams in the league.
Yeah, and I want to get to this more in depth here after we hit this first thing here, though. But most definitely, the you know, giving Omar Khan and the Steelers 1.6 and some change extra cap money is like, you know, is like washing someone else's washing a pair of jeans you bought at a yard sale and finding $1,000 bill in the pocket of it. I mean, this truly is good news if you're a Steelers fan. 1.6 million cap space might not sound like a lot, like I wrote yesterday, but you know, the Steelers definitely can use that space. And when you factor in the new cap number of the 120.6 that you said, you add in the rollover amount of just over $500,000 that they were able to roll forward from leftover 2011 cap space, and this 1.6 million on top of it. Basically, after all these tenders and all right now, if all these numbers hold true, which I don't see why they wouldn't, this puts the Steelers at just shy of $5 million underneath the cap heading into a free agency right now. And who would have imagined that back at the end of the regular season? It's tremendous. Now, another thing, it also lends credence now, too. You know, Kevin Colbert been saying all along, well, we don't really know what the cap number is. We don't know what the cap number is. And part of the doubt creeps in is like, my God, how can they not know what the cap number is right now? Hey, Kevin Colbert was right on target there. They really didn't know what the cap number was, and props to him for not letting the proverbial cat out of the bag in regards to all this. All these guys were probably sworn to secrecy anyway. But, yeah, it's quite a huge development. And if you're a Steelers fan, being just shy of $5 million under the cap heading into free agency, that's a pretty significant thing going forward here. Now, let's talk about the Redskins and the Cowboys situation here. I am very...
Let me just throw in on that, while I think it's significant and it gives the Steelers breathing room, I don't think at the end of the day it'll change their personnel at all. What it does is it maybe just loosens the belt one notch out so that you're not quite up against it so as tightly as you might have been. Because 28 other teams get the same amount of money, the playing field's not really changed. But it's just if you have guys who are, as we've said, as good as anybody in the game at managing their assets, throwing them a little bit more money probably will have a bigger impact just because they're better at managing the money. But as I tweeted yesterday, don't expect the personnel themselves at the end of the day to be any different. The Steelers will just kind of allocate this money along with the other stuff they have. So maybe Jericho Cotri gets a little more money, maybe Byron Leftwich, they can do something with him. But in the big picture, it's what it is, as I'm sure you're going to get into here, is really punishment to the Skins and the Cowboys.
Yeah, and it's wiggle room. It's extra wiggle room for the Steelers. So, they're not going to go crazy in free agency with this extra money, but it gives them wiggle room to, as you say, maybe get a new deal with Mike Wallace here, maybe get Jericho Cotri signed here right after the start of the free agency period here. The wiggle room is a lot bigger, and that maybe let you look at a few other bottom-rung free agents that you might not have been able to look at. But back to the Cowboys and Redskins situation. What do you think about this? I mean, as much as I'm thankful for the 1.6-plus and some change cap room, this kind of does not pass the smell test, in my opinion. Now, and Dan, I think, Dan Graziano has a great Q&A on this cap mess up on ESPN.com. And to kind of lay it out to people real quick here, these teams were told in the uncapped year that, okay, it's an uncapped year, but you cannot go structuring contracts so that big money is assigned in 2010, i.e. Miles Austin's contract was the one that was in the crosshairs here, where they gave him a $17 million base salary in 2010 to help alleviate future cap years, cap costs in future years there. And, of course, the Cowboys and the Redskins were the ones that went, kind of well out of the norm as far as what they spent during that uncapped year. But to me, just a verbal warning, well, it's an uncapped year, but don't do this and don't do that. To me, this just I kind of feel sorry for both these teams.
Well, a couple things here. I think one of the things when this came out yesterday, I think the media mischaracterized it. They talked about dumping salary. And so I think when people read this initially, they were thinking that players were getting cut that they wouldn't normally cut and things were being done. And it really wasn't a salary dump. What it was front-loading salary. So rather than, as you have educated everybody, rather than paying Miles Austin a $15 million signing bonus over 5 years, where it's hit 3 years against the salary cap each year, they paid him a $17 million salary up front in that year 2010, to give them more wiggle room in terms of how they manage their cap going forward. The Redskins did the same with Haynesworth, with Hall, with a few other guys. And so this is what's the issue. It's not salary dumping. It was front-loading salary into the 2010 year so that more space was available going forward. Now, as you've said, if it's an uncapped year, how much control does the league really have? Now, the league has come back and said there were directives given to each team in at least 6 instances. We told them that this was going to be frowned upon. So, because the players – now the question is that people are talking about collusion and antitrust. Well, I'm not sure who brings that lawsuit because the players' union has signed off on this and the new collective bargaining agreement and the new salary cap structure. So they're not going to bring a lawsuit. And you certainly would be surprised if Jerry Jones or Dan Snyder brought a lawsuit against the league. That would be unusual – to say the least.
Now that Al Davis is dead.
right. But, you can see this, the point where they say if it's an uncapped year, why do we have to be operating in a quote-unquote capped environment? So the NFL stance is the other 30 teams were able to play by the rules, and these two guys didn't. And it's really the owners punishing the owners. It is guys internally, the other 30 owners, the other 28 owners, are punishing these two or these four teams, and they are really coming down on the Redskins hard. Do not be confused here. The Redskins losing $36 million in cap space over 2 years will make them non-competitive. They won't be able to go out in the free agent market and get guys like they normally have to fill holes. Everybody knows, they made a big trade on Friday where they acquired the number two pick in the draft in exchange for the sixth pick in the draft, a number one over the next 2 years and a number two this year. Those two picks in the next 2 years just got tremendously more valuable for the Rams. So that trade just became, instead of the Redskins maybe finishing 10th to 20th and trying to evaluate where the picks are, the odds are now the Redskins finish in the bottom 10. So that's a top 10 pick now. And so the Rams really must be loving the fact that this came down the pike here after they made the trade. So, Dave, what I guess I view it as, it's a private club where you can find your own members, and the members may not like it, but they're not going anywhere. So I don't Adam Schefter has said this is not the end of this story. I'm not sure what recourse these two teams are going to have.
You know, I mentioned Al Davis. What would Al Davis do?
Oh, he'd shoot the hell out of him.
Well, I could see Jerry Jones doing it, and I certainly could see Schneider doing it as well, too. So I don't think we've seen the end of this. You know, Goodell and the league had the union up over the barrel, if you would, too, because, it looks like the cap number was going to come in around what, $116 million or so, which would have been a drop. And I don't know, this thing just kind of stinks of trying to massage the cap. It smells like other owners just did not take advantage of a few loopholes possibly in the uncapped year. And now Dallas and the Redskins, are having to pay for it.
I got to say, I think other owners didn't do it because they were told not to do it, not because they're dummies.
Well, shouldn't. I mean, to me, when is a cap uncapped year not an uncapped year then?
Yeah, no, it's a very fair question. And if we're in a private room and say, with five other guys doing podcasts and say, okay, we're all going to take a week off, so nobody do a podcast, and somebody goes and does a podcast, what is your recourse? It's I don't know. I mean, clearly, there are not laws that govern this, and it's going to be interesting to see. But it is members punishing their own. So I don't know.
Yeah, people do other podcasts.
Yeah, well, not good ones.
We haven't heard the end of this, basically, I guess, is what both of us are trying to say. And thank you to the Cowboys and the Redskins for the extra $1.6 million and some change there. But I find it peculiar. And hey, any of our listeners out there, if you have any extended thoughts on this, if David and I are off base on this, then fire them along. TheTerriblePodcast@gmail.com is the email address. And as always, you can hit us up on Twitter, too. So give us your thoughts on that as we move forward through this.
And the other thing is, John Clayton has seemed to be arguing here that because Dallas is only kind of a couple million dollars under the cap and the Redskins are about $20 million under the cap, the impact is going to be greater on Dallas. Nothing could be further from the truth. John Clayton does a great job, got this completely wrong. You find somebody $36 million and another team $10 million, there's no question who the greater impact is going to be. Washington is not going to be able to fill these holes. It is going to have long-term ramifications. Now, they can choose how they spread that $36 million out over the next 2 years. They could take it all this year. They could take half of it this year and half next year. So they'll get to make that choice. But just trust me, the impact is significantly greater on the Washington Redskins than it is on the Dallas Cowboys.
You think this? You think they knew enough of this ahead of the time that this kind of this and of course the bounty gate too. We don't know what's going to come out of that from the Redskins side of things. The deeper this investigation goes of whether or not they would have lost draft picks, either. I suppose we're going to hear the results of all this over the next few days here, or at least before the NFL draft. So, do you think this is a Redskins way of saying, well, crap, let's just go ahead and get our quarterback now, and it's going to take them a few years or us a few years to kind of be competitive anyway. Let's just go ahead and bite the bullet, trade away all these picks, and at least get us a quarterback.
My understanding is the Redskins and the Cowboys did not know this was coming down on Saturday. So
there had to be talk, though, right? I mean,
I, you know, you would assume, but Adam Schefter said, you know, these guys were some essentially blindsided by this. So I don't know. I think they wanted to get the trade done either way, and I think the, you know, from their standpoint, it doesn't really matter what the. I guess it doesn't really matter what the draft piece is. They can say they're going to be good or not. It's all speculation. So they're giving up a higher pick, but you know, I think you want to. You want to get your long-term quarterback. So I don't think that I don't think it was a screw it all, but you know, the attitude maybe should be going forward here now that they do have the information, screw it all for this year. Let's, you know, let's start, you know, let's hope RG3 doesn't get killed and can survive this season. And then we'll build around him, you know, going forward longer term. And in terms of Bounty Gate, reports are that it sounds like Roger Goodell is going to let this free agent thing kind of, settle for a few days, and then maybe on the weekend, the beginning of next week, we should have some outlook on how that's going to go. And it certainly sounds like Greg Williams is going to be suspended at least a year. Mickey Loomis, the GM for the Saints, is going to get an extended suspension, huge fines for New Orleans, draft pick costs, and I'll be interested to see if Sean Payton misses games. I think he's got to be culpable as well, and I think, you know, kind of 6 games for him sounds like the right amount.
And plus, I think the Rams called a news conference for early next week or later this week or whatnot. You know, be interesting. There's some speculation that maybe Greg Williams will be fired.
I don't know how you can't fire him. I mean, you know, you can't have a kind of, you know, you got to go ahead with a defense. You got to put everything in place this year. And I don't know why you'd want to think that you're going to have a new guy coming in next year and have just an interim guy. So I would think when that comes down, he's as good as gone.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. Heck, if you're gonna, it sends a message that the Rams don't want to be part of none of that. So I could definitely see that happen. It'd be interesting to see how that plays out there. So Ryan Clark, of course, chimed in. He was on NFL Network Total Access yesterday evening. The ever outspoken Ryan Clark, Lindsey Soto, or should I say Lindsey Rhodes. Now that just breaks my heart. Now.
Oh, she got married.
Oh, yeah. She let that be known a couple of weeks ago on Twitter, and I tweeted back a huge capital letter "No." But anyway, she sat down with Ryan Clark yesterday, and they finally got to asking him about Bounty Gate and all like that. And basically, Ryan Clark, in so many words, said Spy Gate hurt the integrity of the game more than Bounty Gate did. Now he's been up, you know, and a few Steelers too, James Harrison, and he of course referenced this right after the Patriots loss to the Giants in the Super Bowl. So you know, Clark is always going to hammer Goodell as far as you know, being trying to protect against injuries, but yet, you know, over fining or trying to target Steelers in the crosshairs with some of these fines and all like that. Do you find it surprising that he would say Spygate is a more hurt or is more hurtful to the game than the Bounty Gate situation is? And do you agree with it?
I don't agree with it. But again, hard for me to more hurtful to the game. I don't know. I think more hurtful to the game is if you are actually trying to injure your peers, that's more hurtful to the game. I don't know, you know, Spygate, maybe, you know, the integrity of the game. I'm not sure in either case the integrity of the game is hurt all that much. But you in Spygate, guys are trying to get a competitive advantage by studying. In Bounty Gate, guys are trying to get a competitive advantage by injuring guys. You know, I take the former over the latter. I do think there are still very bitter feelings in the Steeler locker room about Spygate, because as somebody said last week, and I don't know if it was Clark or Harrison or whomever, but they said Spygate might have cost us the Super Bowl, and I think it was Ryan Clark. And I think that is a massive leap of an assumption. Certainly it might have impacted things, but to publicly say that, you know, that caused the Pittsburgh Steelers a Super Bowl is probably, you know, stretching the point a little too far, and as usual, Ryan Clark is willing to do that. So,
Well, we asked this question though with Bounty Gate Day. We said, are we morally outraged with Bounty Gate? And we both agreed no. Okay, now let's ask the same question about Spygate. Were we morally outraged with Spygate?
Absolutely not. I mean, I think Guys trying to get a competitive advantage. We see it all the time in a lot of sports, and these guys cross the line, they got punished for it. But morally outraged, no, I don't think so.
I would be on the other side of the fence on you on this. I mean, I think this is, you know, why was all this crap buried up underneath, you know, and these tapes destroyed and all like that, supposedly? You know, why are you trying to hide so much evidence from this if it wasn't a big deal?
Well, as were the Saints.
As were the Saints what?
Hiding all the evidence. They, you know, they got asked about it, denied it, everything else.
Well, yeah, but there's documents that you know, how many thousands of pages of documents?
Yeah, no, I'm saying they're both guilty. I'm just saying I'm not morally outraged about either one.
Okay, well, I would lean more to being more morally outraged about Spygate than Bountygate. So we got this little thing called free agency about to happen, David. So we been asked, let's see, I got a couple questions here on Twitter. Moderately sane. Sounds like a good description of me on Twitter. Moderately sane, asked via Twitter. He's a longtime follower of mine. Listener to the podcast. He said he would love discussion of wide receiver free agents that are more likely to be signed by other teams in lieu of Mike Wallace. So, you want to tackle that first?
Sure. I mean, I hate to make it a simple response, but it's every guy on the list. I mean, you know, there are now, if you're saying in lieu of Mike Wallace, obviously there are only a couple guys who are going to qualify, the Brandon Lloyds, the Vincent Jacksons. I don't even think the Mario Manningham's fall in the category of in lieu of Mike Wallace, but guys are going to fill holes, and you're going to see 40 or 50 wide receivers change teams here in free agency. So all of those guys will be in lieu of Mike Wallace because I'm now 99% sure that Mike Wallace is not even going to sign an offer sheet with another team. So sorry to be just, you know, broadly stroking that one, but that's kind of how I view it.
Yeah, I agree too. You know, and you mentioned Colston earlier in the show, and let's see, who was it that has the top 100 free agents here. Well, we can kind of go down the list here. There are not a lot of, you know, Vincent Jackson is probably, as PFT has him, probably the third ranked wide receiver available on the market there. Brandon Lloyd, as you mentioned, is another one. I think we covered a lot of these in the previous podcast. Marquise Colston, of course. Robert Meacham, he's a guy, I think Robert Meacham's a very underrated guy for his ability to stretch the field. He's been inconsistent, and of course he's played in a system that spread the ball around so much with Lance Moore, of course Colston, Devre Henderson over there for years. So
the big tight end Graham.
Right, and of course Jimmy Graham. I think Robert Meacham is a really underrated guy in free agency here that I think will attract a lot of teams going forward in lieu of giving up a first round pick.
And the guy I pointed to in the last podcast, Laurent Robinson, the wide receiver from Dallas, another guy who I think is probably a real value guy at wide receiver for guys to look at in free agency.
And you mentioned Manningham. I think Manningham has a lot of upside to him. Now, of course, you'd have to balance the upside to what you're going to pay him, because that would eliminate the upside. So, and he's hitting the market right at the right time with all these guys either being franchise tagged or being re-signed by their team. So Mario Manningham is a guy I think has talent. You know, I just think there's a team going to be willing to overpay for him out there. Pierre Garçon, I mean, what do we really know with this guy? This is a guy that really is another guy that played in the system where they spread the ball around.
Okay, Dave, we got a lot of tweets. There's one from Nittany State 06 where he's talking about letting Wallace go, getting another first-round pick, and then signing Brandon Jacobs with the thought that Mike Tomlin and the group can find receivers to fill the role. We've touched on this, I think, enough. You know, our view is that Mike Wallace isn't going anywhere. So, but the second part of that, I think, is interesting. I don't think the Steelers are interested in Brandon Jacobs per se, but a back who's in a similar mold, not exactly the same. Mike Tolbert of the San Diego Chargers is going to be an unrestricted free agent in a few hours. and he was on NFL Network. You posted the interview on your website, SteelersDepot.com, and he mentioned the Steelers as a possible destination. What are your thoughts on that?
And why wouldn't you, if you're a guy like Tolbert, why wouldn't you go on radio right before, and it was on Sirius XM radio where he had the interview. Why wouldn't you go on there and name as many teams as possible where you saw yourself as a fit? So, you know, that's great. It's great posturing by him heading into free agent. And hey, I admit, Mike Tolbert, it would be a great, probably a great fit for the Steelers. The guy is good in pass protection as well. I think the guy could possibly be, you know, and every down back. And I'm not saying that he's going to take 60 snaps a game, but I think he's a guy that could give you 40 to 50 key snaps a game possibly. But let's face it, this is a guy that's going to get a lot of attention on the free agent market. He named, I think, 15 or so teams in total. The Steelers were an unprovoked team that he listed there. But realistically, David, Mike Tolbert's not going to be a Pittsburgh Steeler.
Yeah, I agree. Mike Tolbert isn't going to be, and neither is Brandon Jacobs. So
absolutely.
We don't look for the Steelers to move in the backfield. Dave, let me ask you a question. One of the things when we talk about all these guys the Steelers have in the salary cap room is their quarterbacks aren't under contract. So they're going to have to do something with the quarterback situation. We pretty much know where they're going to go, but is essentially this cap space that they have, is that going to be used on their second and third string quarterback?
Meaning like the 49ers or what?
For the Steelers. The Steelers.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, and it's already been said that they would like to have Byron Leftwich and Charlie Batch back. You know,
I mean, essentially that could be if Leftwich is at $2 million and Batch is at $1 million, that could be, you know, the bulk of their cap space right there.
Well, I mean, not necessarily, because you got to remember these guys are going to sign probably 1 year qualifying offers. It's going to lower the cap hits on both of these guys, on both Batch and Leftwich. So realistically, you're probably talking less than $1.5 million salary cap, easily under $1.5 million salary cap hit on both these guys, both Batch and Leftwich, if they sign 1 year qualifying offers.
Right. And you've got some displacement costs, but it's going to take up, you know, some of this money that Steelers use is going to be used to sign, you know, these two quarterbacks who are not currently on the 51.
Right, and throw in William Gay into that. I think they would like to have him back on a 1 year qualifying deal, assuming he does not get any attention in free agency. So, you know, they're notorious for signing their own. And of the few, and there's not many of them out there. In fact, I posted another free agent analysis this morning of Trey Essex, which I don't think he's going to be a guy that the Steelers are in a hurry to get back on the 53-man roster. In fact, I wouldn't expect him to get any attention in free agency. But outside of, outside of Byron Leftwich, Charlie Batch that you mentioned, Milwaldy Moore, you know, I really don't see him being back at best. He's a guy that you signed to a one-year qualifying offer at a discounted cap rate to push some other guys in camp. I still see that as a long shot. But outside of Batch and Dixon, you know, I think William Gay is your other option there. So combined, if those three guys sign qualifying offers, you're looking at probably $1.5 million cap space needed for those guys, which is not much when you consider, as you said, the displacement cost on top of it. It's minuscule to sign these guys back to the off-season roster come the time to do so.
And the other news that's just coming out is the Saints have signed Marcus Colston to a 5-year deal. So there's another receiver off the list. Don't think that changes anything with Mike Wallace, but it does mean there is another receiver who's kept by their own team.
And it means that Vincent Jackson's going to get paid.
It does mean
anyway.
And it looks like the front runner there are the Bears. The second team is Tampa, and the dark horse is maybe the Buffalo Bills. Interesting to see how that goes.
Yeah, and let's see, we had another Twitter question in here. Steelers targeting any value free agents? Look like some decent backup cornerbacks and safeties out there. David and I hit on a few of these in the last podcast. Cornerbacks and safety, though, David, I don't see either. Maybe a fringe free safety, but I just don't see it, David.
We banged on this. It looks like they're going to have 10 DBs coming back under contract. I don't think they'll look in the draft for a corner. I've said maybe safety late in the draft. But, you know, I want to reiterate, I actually think safety's become more of a need position than corner. But I don't see it as a need position. There are other places to go. They'll look, I think they'll look for a cheap linebacker, special teams guy, a Kieron Fox type, and maybe an offensive lineman in free agency. But no, I don't see it. I don't see it either, Dave.
And I think the both of us agree, David, that if they do sign, a free agent, it possibly could be a nose tackle, or an inside linebacker. And, yep. And just going down that list real quick, we both mentioned Paul Solioli from Miami, but, you know, the Jets had just re-signed their nose tackle just a few days ago since our last podcast, so he's not going to be on the market. Broderick, you know, the list thins out real quick there. You got Broderick Bunkley, who I think Denver really kind of wants to re-sign, Red Bryant from Seattle, Jason Jones from Tennessee, and Sean Rogers from New Orleans. All those guys I think are going to get enough attention to be priced out of the Steelers market there. So that leaves you somebody maybe like Antonio Gray from San Diego. It gets real, real thin there. Maybe a Pat Sims, a fringe guy from Cincinnati. And then when you look at the inside linebacker position, going forward, Stephen Tulloch from Detroit, Curtis Lofton, he's an interesting name from Atlanta. It seems that Atlanta, since they signed the free agent that they did at inside linebacker, it seems that Curtis Lofton, a very, very heady inside linebacker player, is going to be able to walk. The thing is, though, I think he's going to even get too much attention on the free agency market to make him worthwhile. London Fletcher, a real heady guy, but a lot of these guys, too, are real questionable in pass coverage, and a lot of them are really still two down linebackers, in my opinion. That's kind of what you let loose in James Ferrier as well. So I'm not ruling it out, but I think David and I both agree that if any free agent is brought in here or assigned during this upcoming period here, it would be a nose tackle or an inside linebacker position.
Yep. I definitely agree with that.
I mean, David, these readers are wanting us to expand on this, but I mean, we could go on for hours for names on this list, but realistically, it's just not
good. Well, and I want to come back to the fact that, look, the guy I want to see, the free agent that I want to see him sign is Jericho Cotchery. So, I mean, you know, the Steelers, we talked about the other guy signing qualifying offers. Jericho Cotchery's not signing a qualifying offer. They're going to have to work out a deal with him. And if you talk about, you're going to have to fill these backup quarterback positions. They know who they want. I think there's been a gentleman's agreement that basically you're going to get this stuff done after the kind of feeding frenzy. I don't see those guys going anywhere else. So I think that's kind of all but done. But I want the Steelers to use their remaining cap space, limited that it is, to lock up Cotchery.
And no disrespect to our listeners, on top of it, but, you know, it's nice to be excited about some of these guys hitting the market and all like that. I mean, that's what makes this time a period.
So, look, this is the second biggest day of the non-football season. This is the second biggest day event behind the draft. I mean, the draft's probably first, and this is a close second. There are 100 guys. You know, PFT has their 100-person list, and there are some good names out there. And we saw the Ravens through Ladarius Webb. They put a first-round tender on him. He was 6th on the list. Mike Wallace was 4th on the list. But, you know, you've got good, interesting names. Just unfortunately, the Steelers get to play in the draft, but the way they operate, it's less sexy, but they don't really play in this one.
Yeah, exactly. It's year in, year out. And I think I saw a comment about wanting to cut Willie Colon to sign the Texans tackle. You know, that you just
Winston,
gave
yeah, Eric Winston.
Winston, you just gave Will, you just restructured his contract. If anybody's safe on the roster right now, it's Willie Colon. So,
and what that means is there'd be a huge cap hit, so that they couldn't actually do it.
Well, exactly. I mean, I'm not saying you couldn't do it, but it sure is not fiscally responsible to do it. And then on top of that, give Winston the money that he's going to desire. Look, Eric Winston's not going to be picking up cans on the side of the road very long.
Absolutely. He's going to be signed, I think, by the end of the day today.
And I know it's nice to dream and wish and want, and Steve Hutchinson's another name. These guys are out of the realm. It's going to be bottom-end bargain-free agents, guys that the Steelers value, that think have more talent than what they need to pay him. So, I hate to keep bursting the bubble like that, but it's not anything new. This is how the Steelers have done business for years. And
Dave, they actually couldn't do the transaction without cutting somebody else, because they have to bring all Willie Colon's money forward. All that dead money would come into this year. And so, to create money to sign Eric Winston, you'd actually have to cut another player along with Willie Colon, most likely.
Yeah, and it's just not going to happen. I know people say, well, cut Jonathan Scott. And look, hey, I'm not ruling out Jonathan Scott being a cut down the line, nor am I ruling out Will Allen. But, as I posted the other night, when we got these cap numbers and started fooling around with the numbers, there's no reason for the Steelers to cut Jonathan Scott or Will Allen right now until after the draft. So, it's protection in case they don't get what they need here going forward in free agency, or get what they need out of the NFL draft. You're not going to cut players when you don't have to.
And just a little bit breaking news, it won't be so breaking, but Justin Babineau signs with the Titans. We said Colston with the Saints. Terrell Thomas, the corner, re-signs with the Giants. All these guys are re-signing because the free agency period hasn't started yet. So these guys are all re-signing with their original team. We saw Tony Pashos got cut by Cleveland last night. Somewhat of a surprise, another offensive lineman. Dave and I plan on being back tomorrow with tomorrow afternoon, kind of when we've had 24 hours in the dust to settle, to get into some of the names and see if the Steelers have done anything or what teams have done what and how that changes the landscape, because certainly the Bengals have a ton of money to put to use. And we expect them to be active. So it'll be interesting to see how things go. So we hope to get another one of these done tomorrow to give you our updated view.
One late Twitter question just came in. We'll touch on real quick. And I'm going to need this person to probably clarify more what he's asking. C. Murph, it looks like, on Twitter. Can you explain how incentives work against the cap? And with cap carryover, do they make more sense as incentive met use money next year? I'm not sure I'm understanding your question at all there. Incentives, the Steelers use incentives usually as roster bonuses, and there's not many of guys that were due those this year. Of course, Lamar Woodley and Lawrence Timmons already had their roster bonuses rolled up into restructure and all, so those are two that are already gone and restructured out. The other players that had roster bonuses this year were Marquise Pouncey, Marcus Gilbert, Rashard Mendenhall, and I'm missing one other off the top of my head.
Yeah, there were four of them, right?
There were four in total, but none of them were huge surprises there. So I'm not sure of what you mean, how incentives work. So as far as the cap carryover, the Steelers had over $500,000 in salary cap space that they did not use last year. Teams are allowed to roll that number forward. Of course, the Steelers had the less amount than any of the other 31 teams in the league. So that basically gets rolled over up on top. If you want to clarify your question to me more in depth so I make sure I know what you're getting at, I'll be glad to answer it on the Wednesday episode of the podcast. C. Murph, I appreciate the question. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter @SteelersDepot. Follow David Todd. Hey, we got to get David's followers up @HammerSpeaks. Follow the show on Twitter @TerriblePodcast. And as always, we appreciate everybody listening. We get a lot of great questions and all. Enjoy the next 12 to 24 hours, and we'll be back on Wednesday to help kind of put a bow on what's happened so far.
Fantastic. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.